Welcome to the game.
It's a beautiful thing.
With Mark Duffield.
By golly gosh.
The son of a darkened shearer and a self-described ball-playing jack-of-all-trades.
We shouldn't be surprised, should we?
Who lit up footy fields in the southwest before becoming WA's preeminent AFL scribe.
My goodness.
And Glenn Quarterman.
Wow-wee.
A proud Victorian parked permanently in the west who would have played 300 AFL games if not for his incredibly small hands.
Goodness gracious me.
Together, they are Duff and Quarters.
You know who.
And this is your favourite footy podcast.
It's unbelievable.
Hello, everybody. Tuesday morning, time for the Duff and Quarters podcast. It is the grand final edition of the podcast. It is the man who could have been anything. He could have taken the Brownlow medal off Lachie Neale on Monday night, but for his very, very, very small hands.
You're right, Duff.
That's Glenn Quartermain, the sports editor of the Sunday Times. I am Mark Duffield, the chief football writer of the West Australian newspaper and the son of a darkened shearer. Quarters, I think we got the right two teams through, even though I didn't tip either of them at the weekend.
Yeah, I tipped one of them. I tipped the Cats, didn't tip the Tigers. I think you're right. Interesting quirk is that, you know, the teams finishing 3 and 4 at the end of the home and away season have never played off in a grand final before until now.
Does that tell us that there were some quirks this season?
Yes, I think it does.
The Hubs in Queensland. And
I think it does. Clearly the two best teams we saw at the weekend win.
The games on the weekend tell us those were the two best teams.
Port
Adelaide not far away.
Oh, not far away at all. And I think if Charlie Dixon presents himself a bit better in that forward line, doesn't go MIA as he did, I think Port wins it. So I think I entered the weekend thinking if Richmond win, after Richmond won, I thought if Brisbane get up, they can challenge Richmond. I'm not sure about Geelong. I'm a little bit more confident about Geelong after their performance at the weekend. It was emphatic. I know it blew out a bit at the end as they can win their sudden death, but I just thought that was as emphatic as it could have been.
Well, yeah, I mean, they finally put on the scoreboard at the end what the game looked like for much of the game, didn't they? They were all over them and really butchered a few shots on goals and Brisbane took a few opportunities. I thought Port stood up and just in two or three moments, Richmond handled those moments better. I thought Brisbane were exposed a little bit and four or five of their younger players got exposed pretty badly. I think their forward line got exposed pretty badly. So they've got some work to do. Obviously, Joe Danaher, we think, will go to Brisbane.
Yep.
So that will help. But there were a few guys I reckon will have a long summer. I think Jared Berry will have a long summer, and he was one of their qualifying final heroes. He repeatedly tried to step out of tackles he couldn't step out of in a preliminary final, got pulled down. Cam Rayner, we've been waiting for Cam Rayner to pop. He hasn't popped yet. Time for him to stand up. Hipwood. Charlie Cameron started like a house on fire, then went missing completely, and Jake Coladasny got hold.
Good effort, Coladasny. Good player.
Two matchups, Quarters, one in each of the preliminary finals. Darcy Byrne-Jones on Dusty, good or bad call?
Well, it was clearly a bad call. I mean, a good player, Byrne-Jones, really good season, but some things you're just not capable of doing. I'm not sure if he's the man for Dusty.
So obviously they wanted Tom Jonas for help for the
Rivers
others.
Required elsewhere.
Maybe Dan Houston to Dusty, maybe. Because Tom Jonas played a great game. I thought Tom Cleary stood up.
Did a really good job on Lynch, didn't he?
On Lynch, I thought he was wonderful. But Byrne-Jones didn't cope very well and Dusty was a pretty damaging player.
Interesting. The concern for Port all year had been their defence. Their defence stood up pretty well, I think, bar for a match-up or two. I think the concern with Brisbane all year was their forward line, and I think we saw at the weekend why there was that concern.
And in the other game, Rich on Ablett. Now, Rich used the ball very well, got a fair bit of the ball, a few times knifed incisive kicks through to put Brisbane in an offensive position, but there were times where there was a leg rope.
And all little Gaz needs is a little bit of leg rope and he can turn it on, kick those two goals when Geelong needed them.
Yeah.
He's gone from a, you know, 30-plus possession player who just tears the game apart over four quarters to a sort of 10 to 15, 16 possession player who tears the game apart in one quarter but still plays that significant role.
Yeah, it's not numbers, it's impact with Gaz.
Absolutely.
Like he's had 14 disposals. I think he had 6 or 7 score involvements. He kicked 2 goals. And the 2 goals he kicked were the goals that put on the scoreboard what we felt had been happening all game, wasn't it? Like it was still a 1-2 kick game, And we thought, well, Geelong are all over him. You know, yeah. When is this going on the board? And Ablett went, okay, give it to me, boy.
It's funny, I didn't fear the worst, though, even though they couldn't put them away till late. I didn't fear that this is going to catch up with you.
No.
I always felt Geelong had them at arm's length. Don't you agree?
I absolutely agree.
Yeah.
At no stage did I think Brisbane were coming, which probably tells you they're a little way off. If you're Port Adelaide and you've led from round one to the preliminary final and you're not playing in the grand final, have you come up short?
No.
Or is this about where you
No, were? I don't think it has. They had some things work in their favour. They were able to be in their homes most of the year. It's not their fault. It's just what they were handed. But, did anyone think they'd be a kick from a grand final at the start of the year? No.
No.
I don't think they did. So it has to be a win. It has to be a win for Ken Hinckley. I see Koshy speaking already about extending Ken Hinckley's contract. So obviously we entered this year finals or bust, and I think it's been a good finals performance. They did not disgrace themselves against one of the teams, great teams of the modern era. So nothing really to be ashamed of from that performance. I have a little few things to tweak, but I think you saw Rosie really early. You saw Dersma's game. They're the kids. They're the future report. And in a preliminary final, and I don't think the heat's going to get on much more than it is in a preliminary final. I think particularly early, they stood up. So I reckon it was a great year for Port. And I think if you're a Port fan, you've got a lot to look forward to.
Interestingly, so we felt that Port Adelaide had ruck advantage, and they did at the hit-outs, but Nankervis played a mighty last quarter.
Well, it was the last quarter. Just getting back those intercept marks and, again, Charlie.
The ball needed to hit.
It's really disappointing. And you know what? At the other end, Lynch didn't break the world open, but just did what he needed to do.
It's interesting. Same stats, same number of goals, but you felt that Lynch did what Richmond needed him to do, and you felt there were times when Charlie didn't quite manage to do what Port Adelaide.
Well, that's the role of a power forward. It's not to kick six a week. Yeah. It's to maybe kick two and create another two or three with your presence, and that's exactly what Tom Lynch did.
And I think you feel worse about it two quarters because Rosie looked really dangerous all night. Robbie Gray was probably best on ground at half time. Zach Butters, while he didn't have a big game, is such a dangerous player and such a clean ball handler.
Yep.
And such a creative player. You know, even if he gets one crumb in his hands, something good might happen. Who knows? Even Stevie Motlop might have had a moment.
Mm.
But the ball just never got to ground.
No.
And that was, I think, a real bugbear for them. Whereas, you know, at the other end, you know, Jack Riewoldt hasn't taken a mark since Noah was a kid, but he does get a hand in the air and he does get the ball on the ground, and that enables their smaller
forwards. Noah was all right too.
To go to work. He had a long career, Noah. Was good in the wet.
We should mention Brett Ebert as well. Because
what courage.
Obviously he's had his concussion issues, and that was the final concussion. Well, there was the final head knock that was going to seal it. It probably was anyway. But I think when you look back, you'll be disappointed that he didn't get to play in a grand final and a premiership. But I think when you look back and you soak it all up and you reflect and you think, if that was my final action on a footy field, I've got to walk away with my head held high.
Very, very worthy way to go out. Imagine his place in club folklore if they win that game.
Yeah.
You know, the bloke that ran with the flight of the ball into, was it Riewoldt or Lynch? I can't remember which one it was. One of those two.
Yeah, it might have been both.
running with the flight of the ball into a big Richmond forward and causing the spill. Okay, one question. Hamish Hartlett's deliberate out of bounds, free kick or not?
I'm going to say free kick.
That. Yeah, I'm happy with that free kick.
Yeah.
They were very hot on deliberate out of bounds in that preliminary final, not in the other one.
So you got to read the tea leaves a bit, don't you, if you're a player?
Yeah.
I had some texts from Port fans who were admonishing him. So therefore I would sort of take from that they also felt like it was a free kick.
I think I know which Port Adelaide fan you may have heard from. Quarters.
Yes. Hello, Craig.
The other one was obviously Peter Laddam struggled.
Yep.
He was one of the two rucks they were hoping to overwhelm Toby Nankervis.
Gave away four frees.
And went to half time with three disposals and four frees against, and he was on report.
Yeah, I know. Has that report been heard?
Yeah, he got a fine.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Well, he couldn't suspend him.
No.
They've been fining people for tummy punches all year.
No.
What disappointed you most about Brisbane's performance?
The last quarter.
Yeah.
Turning their toes up. I think their forward line. I think when Charlie Cameron looked up and about early and then Koladashny got on top, and I think the way the forward line functioned after that, help him out. If he's up and about early, it looks like he's going to have a big game. Help him out. Get back there to help him out. A few of their mids. I thought Lachie Neale was terrific in the last quarter.
Really, really
tried to put the team on his shoulders and say, here, I'll lead you here. So, and we'll talk about his Brownlow win in a minute. You know, it's a preliminary final. It's at home. Again, 10 from 10 they were at the Gabba this year, and Geelong have beaten them by 40 points. So I just think it's food for thought for the grand final. That was an impressive performance.
Well, okay. If you're judging Port Adelaide and Brisbane going forward to next year, who would you rather be?
Oh, geez, that's a good call. Well, Brisbane are going to get Joe Danaher. Now, we don't know what that's going to amount to. I think with the change of environment, we might see a bit more of him. I'm going to say Brisbane. Gee, it's marginal.
Yeah, I'm going to say Port.
Mm.
I love Rosie. I love Butters. Dersma was terrific again the other night. Todd Marshall's got a way to go, but there's just enough there that you think, okay, there's a bit there to work with. I thought Cleary stood up for them. I think Houston's in the process of standing up for them. Yeah, I think they've got less things to fix than Brisbane has.
Yeah, it's a pretty good call. Yeah, it's marginal.
Brownlow medal, any surprises?
We
picked the top four.
I think
four.
We did. No, we did. Yeah, I was aware of that on the night too, don't worry. I was going to text you, but I thought you'd realise I don't need to.
Yeah, no, I was patting myself on the back.
So I think Lachie Neale.
I was very happy with my work.
I don't think either of us were split the atom by picking Lachie Neale.
No,
but
that's right.
I think the order, I think we got pretty well right. Boak, Steele, Petraka. I mean, that's what. I'll tell you what did come out of it for me, though, is get on Matty Rowell next year or the year after, because the games he played, he was 3-3-3. Not the first round, but so I think he polls. We've had this discussion and we said it'd be really interesting to see how well he polled in those games, so he polled.
Well, big, powerful inside mid,
yep.
Shock of red hair. They are going to notice him, aren't they?
They are. So a couple of anomalies in there. Lachie Neale got the 3 for a game in which Jed Anderson gave him a bit of a touch-up.
Yep.
So pretty well nullified him. And he got
Jared Pollock got votes in the game before he got dropped.
There you go. So, well.
Clearly the umps were differently to the coaches.
And, well, yeah. Well, actually, he got the coaches' votes from the opposition coach the week he got dropped. So, well, less said about North, perhaps the better at the moment.
Yes. Okay, so of the local players, 5 led Fremantle with 10. Were you a bit surprised Nat Nui didn't poll a couple more?
Oh, yeah. I am surprised, but no, Brownlow night, nothing surprised me. I go back to 1980. Jeff Raines played every game in the centre. Richmond won the flag, won the BNF, didn't get a vote. He was the raging favourite that year. So it does surprise me given the umpires have got, I think everyone's a bit more educated about the game and there is more, I'm not just saying pure stats, but there's more information at your disposal. So given his dominance, you know, around stoppage, around the centre, I am a bit surprised he didn't poll better. In this day and age, I think they would have more wherewithal to know the impact he has on the competition.
It's a remarkable stat on Raines. He did catch the eye a little bit, Jeff, too.
Well, he was the absolute raging favourite going into the grand final, and I did have that in the back of my mind with Lachie Neale. I'm really pleased he won the Brownlow. I thought he spoke really well after the count. It was entertaining back vision too with his Brisbane teammates there. It looked like it was going to be a reasonably big night, that one.
Oh, I would have thought so. They're Mad Monday or Mad Sunday going into Mad Monday. Jeremy Cameron is leaving GWS and Geelong is front and centre.
Oh, look, I think Geelong will get him. I think when he's a restricted free agent, so they can match it. But, these deals tend to be done. And I think, but the one issue I'll say is, so Geelong's, it'll be 2 first rounders.
Yep.
Treloar and Shield were the same. Shield was the same.
So GWS's play here will be match the deal, force the trade.
Well, the thing that they need is players. Their depth is being quickly eradicated, GWS. So
Do they need to go back to the draft and reboot?
Well, I think they've got, if they can use I'm not sure about rebooting. I think, do you go back to the draft and risk drafting in players who want to leave in 2 and 3 years' time, or do you go to clubs and say, look what we've got, and get some players who want to come to your club, maybe in the mid of their careers? Because if they can use this to their advantage, I think they can it can sort of be a win-win, I think, for GWS still. So I reckon they need – it's a real concern for them at the moment, their depth. So, you know, 9 players from their 2016 premiership preliminary final side, the losing preliminary final side to the Western Bulldogs, are no longer there. 9.
And so maybe we – when we looked at them at the start of this year and we thought, oh, well, that grand final appearance last year will top them off, that might have been the last yelp of that group of players' quarters. And it might be that could now be. They're just batting with too long a tail.
Maybe. You know, I mean, you look at the end of the year, some strange decisions were made, dropping Cornelio, bringing him back in the next week. I've got my suspicions. I think – well, they're not suspicions. They're absolutely right. Jeremy Cameron knew – this has been a deal not in the making the last month or so. This has been a deal in the making for the last year or so. And I think the Kelly trade has put Geelong in a really good position. And I think that probably no one happier than when the Kelly trade went through than Jeremy Cameron last year, because he knew that they were going to have the wherewithal to try and lure him back there. He's a Western Districts boy. Yep. So he's sort of going home to the region. So I think it could be a win-win. Looks like Hawkins might sign on for another couple of years. So
I don't see why not.
Yeah.
He was almost the best player in the competition.
That's right. So he plays for another 2. You got Jeremy Cameron there. I mean, the side that I feared 12 months ago that was going to be maybe having one last shot at it, all of a sudden has a 2-3 year window, possibly. I mean, Higgins is another who's going
possibly.
To. Yeah, possibly.
I thought Higgins started to go over the hump a little bit this year. Mm-hmm. I think Geelong will be relevant.
Jeremy Cameron's a good get, and a new environment, and we know Chris Scott's an excellent coach. New environment, anything's possible for him. I feel like I've been shortchanged with Jeremy Cameron for a long time.
Yeah, I do too.
So I want to see the full 100 cents in the dollar duff.
Yeah, and newsflash, Jeremy, you can't pick and choose your contest now, mate.
No.
You know, and you've been doing that off about $1 million a year for the last 2 or 3 years. So I think Geelong will point that out to you in no uncertain terms, I would think, if you continue to do that. All right.
Yes.
Nick Natanui.
Yes.
Is the West Coast club champion. Good result?
Great result. I think he's earned that this year, where it's a dominant display of ruck craft that we haven't seen for a long time. So very, very good decision. Gaff, good to see Gaff. There was only very marginal too, wasn't it?
Gaff went into the Collingwood final, the elimination final, 3 votes ahead. And Natanui, of course, we remember what happened in that game. Natanui utterly dominant out of the middle, but West Coast couldn't quite get it done elsewhere. He polled the maximum, I think it's 15 votes, and Gaff received 10 votes. So Natanui won by 2. Have to be one of the closest finish.
Mm.
I know that I remember Don Pike and Glenn Jakovich tying for the BNF in 1993.
I was there that night.
I can't remember others, but certainly that's one of the closest that I can remember in West Coast history.
Look, I think if you look at it, a couple of things that surprised me. Liam Ryan
finished 6th.
Yeah, I thought he might have finished a little higher.
He certainly would have been in my top 4. And if you'd have flicked, and no disrespect to Tommy Brass, who clearly had a great season and clearly impressed the hell out of their hierarchy, if you had Tommy Barass 5th or 6th and Liam Ryan 4th ahead of both Barass and Liam Duggan, I reckon they would have pretty much nailed it. I reckon that's pretty much how we viewed it.
Yep.
Josh Kennedy perhaps a little bit lower than we might have thought.
Well, Jack Darling 1 rung higher than him.
Yeah,
surprised me a little.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Wasn't a standout year by Darling by any means.
No, but I guess the thing about both he and Kennedy, we tend to mark them very hard, don't we? They've been
always marked JD very hard.
Yeah.
He's always been very harsh.
The fans have always marked JD very hard, actually.
So. They have. Look, a little bit of local news stuff. Today, officially, you've been saying for weeks that Jesse Hogan was maybe not officially on the table, but unofficially on the market was open. Well, he's now officially on the table along with Connor Blakely.
So I think the term I used was not on the market but not off the table.
Mm.
And clearly now he's on the table. I still think there's a fair chance that both Blakely and Hogan will be at Fremantle yep. next year. And the reason I say that, I'm just not sure how much interest there will be for him. A club like Collingwood will probably come for Hogan and have a look.
So we're talking second round draft pick?
I would have thought anything south of 25,
yep.
Fremantle has to
have a done. Think about. Yeah.
I think that, you know, look, for about a month this year, he was available to play in their senior team and didn't play.
Mm.
So he's, if he stays, he's got a lot of work to do at Fremantle. You know, clearly hasn't gelled with the group, clearly hasn't impressed them too much. They know he's had issues and they've been trying to support him with those issues. And I've got no doubt that wherever he is, whether he's at Fremantle, whether he's not playing or whether he's playing somewhere else, if he plays somewhere else, he'll go with their blessing. If he's playing there, they'll continue to try and support him and help him. And if he's not playing, I suspect they'll continue to try and support and help him. But clearly, it hasn't worked yet. He's 2 years at Fremantle.
Connor Blakely?
I think Connor should leave. I think if you look at the selection pecking order, it's pretty much clear that he is, next into the team is probably Luke Valenti. So Connor's behind him. You've got a young guy like Bailey Banfield who is touch and go whether he stays on the list or not, but he is a guy who Fremantle has played as a forward, which is out of position. At some stage they may say, well, let's see how Bailey goes as a midfielder, which is his natural position. If Valenti and Bailey Banfield were to both move ahead of Connor Blakely in the selection pecking order, he's a long way back. Mm. Now, right now, you'd say that if David Mundy either doesn't go on or goes on and the game goes past him pretty quickly, Connor Blakely's not that far away from playing. Needs to work on his disposal and has to be absolutely as fit as he possibly can be because he's not quick.
Yeah.
A club like Essendon that needs a big-bodied mid might look at Connor, but I'm not sure that there'll be a big offer for him at the trade table. And the other one, of course, at West Coast is Lewis Jetta.
No news yet.
So the longer that goes, you'd have to think not good news for Lewis. A week or so ago, I think his camp was quite buoyant that, you know, he was a 60-40 to get a contract. And I'd be wary of West Coast, if I was West Coast, of cutting a Lewis Jetta. I think it may be that Lewis Jetta may, in 2021, be like a bit like Will Schofield was in 2018, where he's out of the team, he's out of the team, he's out of the team, there's an injury, bang, he comes in. And because he's got that brilliant disposal, he may offer you something at the business end of the year which may enable you to achieve something. So if I'm West Coast, I'd probably let Lewis Jetta go around one more year, I think.
You were at the best and fairest count last night, the John Worsfold medal. Good evening. How are you feeling this morning?
Didn't have a drink.
Oh, that's right. You're still on your month sabbatical.
I didn't have a drink. But one, because I was half expecting, you look at the time frames and sometimes we're able to get the interview with the winner in the paper and sometimes we're not. It ran late, so we weren't able to. But
just read the Daily Telegraph. They'll have the winner.
Yeah, that's right.
Whoa, shots fired.
We should point out, the Dally M winner, of course, Jack Whiten was announced before the count. We point out, not the journalist's fault, it wasn't error made in production, and I mean that in all seriousness. And these things that we all fear when we're dealing with embargoed situations all the time. It was unfortunate, very unfortunate, and I think they're looking at their dotting the I's and crossing the T's as we speak.
Well, it's like officially, and I'm assuming unofficially too, no one gets to see the Brownlow votes till they come out of the safe that they're brought into the county.
The armour guard safe, yeah.
Yeah. So why isn't it the same with the Dally M?
You'd have to ask them that. I think this has been happening for a while.
It's risky.
It is.
There'd be a lot of betting.
Could be.
I'd
suggest there could be some forensics done. You know, if that's the case, then I would hope that is not the case.
Yeah.
Let me put it that way.
Yeah.
If some people did, that's something I hadn't given much thought to, but that is a concern.
Quarters, a few days on from our understanding of Reece Shaw stepping away indefinitely from the game at North Melbourne, how are you seeing things unfolding at the Kangaroos?
Well, it's a dire situation at the Kangaroos. I have concerns about what the future holds. If you're a dyed-in-the-wool North Melbourne supporter and you want to remain in Melbourne, I think you might have to readjust your view a bit. Mm. I'm not sure if they're going to remain in Victoria. I think they are headed south to Tassie. Mm-hmm. I have great concerns for Shaw as well. And, you know, obviously we only wish him the best. And it's good that, I guess, the circumstances allow them now to step away from the game, you know, have your 12 months, get yourself right, and then see where you fit back in the game, whether that's in a coaching role or an assistant coaching role. Interesting comments from Alistair Clarkson the last few days about his concerns now for senior AFL coaches. I think we've seen in recent times a lot of senior coaches having difficulties off the field.
Yep.
So I think it's something that we need to get better at.
Yep.
I think the AFL Coaches Association does a pretty good job, but I think it's an area where we need to get better at. So I have concerns for North in terms of where they finish up. Maybe they're not concerns. Maybe it'll be a good thing for North, you know, in the ultimate. And certainly if Tasmania is able to get one team and is able to get behind the club, that'll solve a few financial problems. As far as their coach goes, you know, if you're at the moment, it's a bit of an open field, but you'd think if Paul Roos, who reportedly has been approached, if he's half interested, that generally tells me if you're half interested, you can be convinced.
Yeah, geez.
You can be convinced if you're half interested.
You know what? Half interested doesn't get it done at North.
Well, maybe your half interest is, though, because you're concerned about the situation. You want to know more about what's going on.
Yeah. I would rather – I'm not sure whether a Michael Voss – would what, you know, if it's your second go at it and you know it's your last chance, whether or not that's the club you want to go to, maybe they have to try and find someone who knows that this is their one shot at it.
Mm. So like a Michael Voss.
Well, Michael Voss may think there'll be other opportunities.
Yeah, and it's a big
call.
And
he may think there are better opportunities.
There's only one way to go with North, though. They can't get any worse, the situation. And I don't mean that facetiously.
17th, not 18th.
Yeah, well, yeah, but I think the way the team finished the season.
I know, yeah, they were the worst team in the comp at the end of the year.
You can make an impact pretty quickly on a list like that. It can do a lot for your credentials. And I would think he would make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
As I said, I think Paul Roos, if you're half interested, you can get talked around, depending on what your view is once you see the real truth behind the vision, you know, what's going on there.
All right. I think it's time for everybody's favourite segment. It is time for...
Hello, Newman.
Josh's mailbag.
When you control the mail, you control information.
Josh's mailbag.
Hello, guys. We're in a different studio today, so we're just setting up, but classic mailbag bumper week.
Haven't been this close to Duff since that... We feel like night we got very drunk, Duff.
We feel like the Supremes.
That night you were trapped in the desert, just one tent. Don't worry about it. We'll leave it there. Moving right along, some very good emails this week. Not as many, but we have some very good questions. First one from our man in Arlington in the USA. Obviously an international flair, as always, guys. Glenn says, hi, thanks for taking all the questions, guys. As a Port international member and also a fan of Brisbane, I was quite disappointed last weekend and my preference would be for Richmond and Geelong to lose. So I'm going to have a huge amount of excitement for the grand final. Has there ever been a grand final with less likeable teams for the neutral?
I'm not sure there's not
life for Geelong.
There's not much antipathy for Geelong. No, I mean, no. The thing about Geelong is clearly that they have been a very successful club for a long period of time, which can create people get tired of them. There's certainly a lot of antipathy for Richmond.
There is. And I think with Geelong, I mean, if you look at the club, you look at the way they've been able to stay very much relevant in the final scheme of things. You look at Chris Scott, apart from sometimes his carry-on in the coach's box, apparently there's never been a free kick paid against Geelong that didn't...
Well, not a justified one.
No, that's right. Yeah. But I think we all admire what he's done. And I think I've admired the way he's handled himself this season. Everybody, you know, is happy, I think, for Gary Ablett to be getting one last shot at it. But I think overall people are really happy for Patrick Dangerfield to get a shot at it because he's been a great performer over a long period. He's obviously heavily involved with the Players Association, so he does care about the game, and he's a pretty good media performer too. So I think all round, I think Patrick Dangerfield gets the tick, and I think we'd all like to see him do really well on Saturday, which is why I picked him to win the Norm Smith.
Oh, you guys are you're on a roll already as far as end of the season predictions. So
we are.
We'll keep going that. Put your money on that. Just another one here from Cameron Trickett, also pretty good media personality. Paddy Dangerfield, the best media personality, ticks every single box ever. I don't think I've ever seen him slip up.
He's been pretty good, yeah.
Bloody good. Cameron Trickett here. G'day, Duff, Cordis and Josh. Love the pod. I'm just wondering who you think the Eagles' worst ever trade selection was. Without putting too much thought into it, I think picking up the nephew of a Port Adelaide legend, his dad also played for Port, in Brad Ebert at pick 13 ahead of West Aussies like Harry Taylor, pick 17, and Alex Rance, pick 18, the son of a former Captain Murray, would have been the worst pick off the top of my head. And I just quickly looked up what they actually got for Ebert when they traded him. They traded pick 45, which was Brendan Archie, coincidentally, and Brad Ebert, and they got back Fraser McInnes in pick 28 and pick 49.
Oh, I think it's probably being a bit unkind to Ebert. He's a very serviceable player at West Coast. I'm sure there have certainly been worse players traded in. The players you mentioned before, Harry Taylor, Rance, there's been a lot of clubs who there are a lot of other clubs who didn't pick them up as well.
And you can never say on the time. It's so easy in hindsight to be like, that draft, he was going to be.
It was a very late draft.
Yeah, exactly.
Freo got him. So it's a really inexact science. And I think you can be – it's probably a bit unfair on Ebert, I reckon. I think he's been serviceable. I don't think there'll be a bad word said about him at West Coast or Port. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think Brad Ebert was a good player at West Coast, a better player at Port Adelaide. West Coast haven't been big traders. West Coast have been drafters rather than traders. Fremantle's been big traders. And I think if Fremantle could learn anything from West Coast, and they don't like to learn from West Coast, it's like having your big brother tell you how to do it. Mm. But if they could draft, and then if you need something, trade. Whereas I think Fremantle's tried to trade earlier in the process, and I don't think that works as well. It'll be interesting to see how we view the Tim Kelly trade in a few years' time, because remarkably, as I wrote in the paper today, Geelong has offloaded Tim Kelly and got better.
Yeah.
And West Coast has picked up Tim Kelly, and as we speak, they're not clearly better. So that's an interesting trade as we speak.
Yeah, I think you'll definitely be better next year and thereafter. I think Tim Kelly is a bit of a watch this space. I agree with you, Duff. I think it is. We won't know for a long time. We didn't know for a long time with the Josh Kennedy deal for a long time.
Which West Coast won.
They did win. Clearly, I think, and that's not because he's a better player than Judd. It's just that at the time the trade was done, I think West Coast obviously got a lot more out of Josh Kennedy. So. Really interesting talk. It's a very hard thing to judge, though, really.
Thank you very much, Cameron, for the draft question. Moving on to Curtis from Auburn Grove. This guy's a Freo fan. Guys, g'day, guys. Only got into the podcast halfway through the year, but really loving it. Listen twice a week. Great stuff. So congratulations, guys. Mm. Would like to just hear your thoughts on Lachie Neale. Firstly, congrats on him from winning the Brownlow this week. Great year and fully well-deserved. Did you boys think the speech could have showed some acknowledgement to Fremantle for picking him up at 58, even a simple thank you would have seemed okay? It's a bit of a kick in the guts of a club that supported him for 7 years, or perhaps I'm overreacting.
He did mention Ross Lyon and Freo in the before his speech. I think when Bruce McAvaney was speaking to him, he did mention him. So that was certainly, they weren't not mentioned. So I think he sort of ticked that box, really. He could have been a bit more effusive in his praise during his other speech, but I think he did a pretty good job. I mean, it's pretty easy to criticise when you're under that spotlight. It's a significant moment. I think he handled himself pretty well.
Yeah, I have no problem with it. Fremantle people are going to be, upset with him because he left, and he's playing very good football for another team. I think he played last year. I think he played as well as he'd been playing at Fremantle, even though people were giving him credit for playing better. This year, I think he's gone to another level, Lachie Neale. I think Lachie Neale is now the cleanest ball-handling player around stoppage we have seen for a long, long time. Terrific year, well-deserved. Fremantle fans will be upset, but, all credit to him. Really, what you should be saying as a Fremantle fan is, we don't care. We just want to win a flag before Brisbane does. And then we can go na-na-na-na-na.
Just on that before we move on to the last one, and a bit of international flair, just foreshadowing. Just from this same man, Curtis, talking about from himself and Freo fans and the burn in his gut, obviously, because of losing a player like Neil. Can you guys shed any light on the actual real story? There's always conflicting reports about improved contract at the Lions, falling out with Nat Fife, falling out with Ross Lyon, and not sure, and he's just not sure what to believe. Can you guys provide any clarity as to the real reason why Neil left?
So there have been a few little rumblings going around. Nathan Fife was invited to his wedding. So you'd have to think, you don't invite a bloke to your wedding who you don't like if you don't have to. You'd think that one puts that one to bed. Certainly the one that probably – the two things that carry the most kudos with me are, one, that he got a very good contract. And let's face it, you know, at the end of the day, they are professional sportsmen, and if someone's going to pay you $150,000 or $200,000 a year more, that's where you're going. That's just, you know, that's where your bread is buttered. Two, there were suggestions that Neil was discontent with some of the younger members of the Fremantle player group, that he felt their standards of professionalism had fallen short of the mark. He wasn't happy about it. And I think there were a couple of sort of incidents where he tried to give some people feedback and that wasn't well received. And there was a couple of times where he felt like, you know, this is not great and I'm not happy with the environment here. So I think that's probably more likely than any great falling out with the coach. There was word that Lachie Neil was very good friends with Tommy Sheridan, and Tommy Sheridan did get an almighty cook from Ross Lyon after a game late in that season when he left. So whether that had anything to do with it, whether he was upset about that, whether he felt that that was uncalled for, but certainly he was quick to acknowledge Ross Lyon and his role in his development as a player.
He certainly got a nice cook from Ross Lyon early in his career too. Get that fat ass. Get rid of that fat ass and come back next year.
The fat little forward pocket. Don't be the fat little forward pocket player from Glenelg who played 30 games and then disappeared.
Yeah. Well, he's done a pretty good job of not doing that. Well done, Lachie Neil.
Yeah, well played.
He's definitely not in Glenelg. Richard from Richard Heptonstall, and he's in Stockholm, Sweden. Stockholm, Sweden. Finally cracked that Swedish market. Yeah, it's a big market.
It's a tough market to crack that.
Emerging. Long time.
Get there, Duff.
Maybe you can invite us over there when the borders open up. Long time listener, first time caller. Love the podcast. I'm from Perth and have been living in Sweden for the last 3 years. My Swedish wife, you ever meet an Australian in an Australian bloke in Norway or Sweden? I lived in Norway for a year. It's like, oh, what are you doing here? It's like, oh, I met Swedish Norwegian missus and they wanted to move back here. Anyway.
A lot of Darkin farmers went to Sweden early on in the piece.
Did they? So,
yes, on Kontiki tours and such like.
And not to tour.
Kontiki tours and made it a stay, a long-term
stay. Not to tour the IKEA factory.
No. They weren't looking at the Bjorn Borg Museum, no. I don't think.
Must check that out, though, to the sports fans. My Swedish wife is right into her footy and got a very respectable 108 on from the regular season in her tipping. Well done. She loves team songs. Did you know that the French national anthem, aka Brisbane, got meme by the French opera Geelong on the weekend? My question is, if Geelong win the grand final, they move to 4 flags, 8 grand finals, 15 prelims, and 22 top eights in the AFL era since 1990. Does that make them the most successful AFL team in history, even though Hawthorn, 5 flags, 6 prelims, 6 grand finals, 8 prelims, 18 top eights, automatically better because they won the flags, obviously. 15 prelims in 31 years is pretty bloody good.
They've got to win it first. But if they do, they've got a very good argument. I would say that's – I think the fact is they keep going back. They keep finishing top four. Hawthorn's obviously dropped away a little now. So they've got a very good case. Got to win it first, though.
Yeah, you got to win it. Hawthorn supporter sitting next to me, bristling. look, I think they've been a magnificent club. I think they're a magnificent club in the 90s when they couldn't win the grand final. To get to as many as they got to in 89, 92, 94, 95, to get back there again in 07 and finally win it, I think they've been a terrific club. I think there are three or four clubs that have been absolutely outstanding in the AFL era. I think Geelong are one, Hawthorn's another. I think West Coast is another. They're the benchmark. Yeah, well, Brisbane had a short stay, didn't they? But the others have been good. They've come, they've rebuilt, they've come again. And Geelong has been able to sustain itself over a very long period
West
of time.
Coast, no one's played more finals than West Coast.
We've got that right here, actually. 4 flags, 7 grand finals, 9 prelims and 24 top eights. More top eights than any other team, so that would be finals. Very good point, that one, actually.
Depends how you measure it. Depends how you measure the grand finals that were won.
As footy connoisseurs, the two of you, and we're in a win or bust like world in Australia, particularly obviously the EPL, it's if you're top four. Do you rate that consistency for a club, or is it just about grand finals for you guys?
No, I do. There's another club that I'll mention there is Sydney, and Sydney's method for a long time was just put yourself there, and sooner or later the stars will line up for you. Even if you're not the best team, sooner or later you'll catch a team on a bad day, or you'll catch a team with injuries, and you'll get it done. And probably Sydney's two flags, if you look at 05 and 2012, I'm not sure that they were the best team in either of those years.
No.
But they were going through a stage where they just put themselves there year after year after year after year. And I hate the way we denigrate the loser of the grand final. I think, you know, if you get to a grand final, you've done a hell of a lot right.
Depends what the year. I think you couldn't take a lot from last year if you're GWS, but you've done a hell of a lot right.
They still got there, though, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. They did.
Thank you very much, Richard. Very good question. Thanks for doing the research. Rusty from Hammond Park, last one, guys. We're talking about small forwards in weeks previously with West Coast Jack Petricelli re-signing for 3 years, but we didn't talk about Jared Cameron. Can you guys give any update on Cameron's status and whether or not he's a potential trade target? Because there was those back-to-back games, he had 8 goals over 2, basically.
He's only in his second year of footy, Jared Cameron. So if you're West Coast, I think you're going around for at least another year. He's got to do some more. Like, he was playing games where he was barely touching the footy, and he had a month-long stint where he might bob up and kick a late goal, but he was barely touching the footy. So he's got some steps to take, but he's quick. He's a good kick for goal. He's smart around goal. I think there's a bit to work with. And I think
lots to work with, I thought.
They'll be hoping that he makes some progress.
Thank you, everyone, for the emails this week. We'll have another pod on Thursday, so get your questions in before then.
Thank you very much for joining us today. We'll be back on Thursday. We'll be running the ruler over the grand final quarters. You tipped one last week.
I did.
I did mention since Noah was a kid. I haven't tipped a winner since Noah was a kid. ever since I went out on a limb and tipped Collingwood to beat Geelong, it's all gone to crapola for me.
Yeah.
But thank you for joining us. We'll be back on Thursday talking about the biggest game of the year and the most unusual grand final ever played.
If you're a fan of the podcast, why don't you send a message to Josh's mailbag? Have you figured out how to fix footy? Are you trying to settle a debate with a mate? Or maybe you just want two of Australia's most experienced footy journalists to turn their attention to an AFL issue of the week. Send to the mailbag at josh.garlep, that's G-A-R-L-E-P-P, at wanews.com.au. And also remember to like, subscribe, and of course, tell your mates so we can make this as big and as good as possible. Thanks for listening.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast on the game.
You know who? It's unbelievable.